Wah bam 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 tooty boot, oh boot.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and that's Little Richard, Tutti Frutti. Earl Palmer, who played drums on his song, on this song, died on this day in 2008. Today on the program, we'll bring you some of our favorite segments from the past two decades of The Mark Steiner Show. What you're about to hear is a pre-record, so we can't accept any calls. Please send us any feedback to talk@steinershow.org or tweet me at Mark Steiner. Enjoy. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, of course, and we are here with Paul D. Miller, a.k.a. DJ Spooky. He's a writer, a conceptual artist, a brilliant interpreter of who we are in this culture. He's currently an artist in residence at MICA, and he's brought with him Paul Rucker, another brilliant artist who I've heard about before, didn't know who it was when he walked into my studio, but now I do know who he is, visual artist, composer, musician, also an artist in residence here at MICA. And Paul, good to have you with us.
Hey, man. Well, how you feeling?
So good to have you all here. Good to have you both in Baltimore.
Thanks for having us.
There's so much to start with here, and that we could talk about. I was going through all the stuff that you've done, Paul Miller, over the years, in thinking about this show today. But I'd like to go back and do a definition for a moment, because a lot of people who know your work, and of course, there are people who don't know your work, right? That's just the nature of existence.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to talk about that. I mean, because you've been identified with the whole kind of philosophy of remix, which people think about in terms of taking pieces from old songs back in the day and mixing them up with new pieces from hip-hop in a new world. But your kind of philosophy of looking at the world of remix seems to go beyond in many ways. It takes in literature, takes in film, takes some philosophy from before and what's going on now. It's kind of a way of looking at who we are.
Yeah, I mean, right now America is in the middle of a whole bunch of different things. I mean, the economy is changing, the way people think about the idea of aspirations of, like, our, you know, the last couple generations. Are we going to have a permanent, you know, sense of underemployment, digital media? Like, Jaron Lanier wrote a great series of essays where he said, you know, Kodak, at its peak, hired over 150,000 people, whereas Instagram, you know, which has millions of people uploading photographs, their staff is only 13 people. So, you know, the economy is changing, the way people think about production and all these things. I'm very into mobile media and digital media as a composer. But above all, I think these are tools that if you can see what's going on in Ukraine, you can see what you were just talking about with the revolutions and people transforming their societies. There's an incredible amount of agency that comes with being able to share information and make it better. And that's what remixing is about, you know.
And did you start out as a composer? Is that where you began?
Yeah, my mom's a historian. Actually, amazing enough, she's here, she's friends with a Baltimore artist named Leslie King.
Oh, Leslie King Hammond.
Yeah, Leslie King Hammond.
Yeah, yeah.
And
sure.
So that's how I came to be here. So there was a kind of a quirky. My mom's a historian of design, and my dad was dean of Howard University's law school in the 60s. So there was a kind of political household. I grew up near DuPont Circle, and there used to be you know, stuff like Kramer books, P Street books.
All that, I remember that.
Yeah, like Food right. for Thought, which is a vegetarian restaurant.
Right.
My mom had a store called Toast and Strawberries. So for me, art and music were never separate. And I grew up in a household that very much valued information, you know. So downtown D.C. in that time in the ancient 80s, you know, when I was a kid, it was a very interesting time because we had Ronald Reagan on one screen and you had Ronald, you know, Mayor Marion Barry on the other. And I did the film Slam, you know, with Saul Williams. I produced this, the score for that. You know, I was looking at that. But MICA, for me, is always a place I'd heard about. It was a very good art school, and I was very interested in taking a break from my normal hectic schedule in New York to get some work done. So I'm coming down here, working a lot of writing, a lot of compositions. And to me, Baltimore is kind of cool. Like, it's like Detroit without the ruins, you know. But, like, you know, kind of slow, chilled out.
So, Paul Rucker, I'm glad you came in today as well. So, I mean, you live in Seattle. That's your home base.
Correct.
New York is your home base.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it about Baltimore, about B-more, as we call it, if you grew up here, that you think this is a place to come to and kind of sit and create. That's interesting to me.
Yeah. I mean, my favorite bookstore is Red Emma's. I mean, I've been hanging out there having
coffee. Red Emma's is cool.
Mm-hmm. They have great books, really. I mean, what I love about Baltimore is that kind of bookstore is a metaphor. If it's a smaller community, there's a lot of sharing of information. And people are very supportive. I also met the curator of the new contemporary museum, Diana Hagag.
Right.
She's
right.
Very cool. Everybody, you know, just really interesting dynamics. And it's smaller, you know. And so New York is big, and people rotate in and out all the time, you know.
It's important to hear that because when you're in a place, you don't appreciate some of the things that what you have in it because we're always criticizing what we see around us without kind of reveling in what we see. How do you look at that, Paul?
I think Baltimore's amplified America. I mean, so many of the good things that I love and also some of the things that concern me about what's happening in the country are amplified here in many ways. And it's a really charming city. I love the warmth of the people and the dedication of the artists here that are doing a lot of work that means a lot. And, you know, there's been a lot of generosity and with folks. But there's also the disparity. It's also the gun violence factor, and I do a lot of work with gun violence. And I mean, last year Baltimore had 224 homicides.
Yeah, right.
So you know, Baltimore's number 4 in the country as far as homicides, and number 47 in the world. So that's, you know, one of the other draws here is looking at, you know, the reasons for that, you know, and correlating that with the disparity in wealth and disparity in opportunity.
So how do you take what you all think is the art that you do, the remixing of all kinds of aspects of work, whether it's your stuff on the Antarctica, you're also now on Nauru, which I have a question about in a moment as well. But, I mean, how do you see that both interpreting who and what we are now and what it has to say to us about where we're going?
Well, there's two issues at hand. One, America is a culture of sampling. I mean, for me, you know, as Paul Miller growing up in Washington, D.C., first and foremost, it's an international scene, even though it's one of the most divided cities in America racially, you know, recovered from the 60s. It took decades.
You're talking about D.C.?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then at the same time, the international community, because of, there was a lot of Koreans, there was a lot of Ethiopians. There's also a lot of the embassy kids, and now you have stuff like Thievery Corporation. Those are all friends of mine. So the funny thing is, I was growing up with stuff like Fugazi on one hand and Trouble Funk on the other, this go-go band. But on the other end of the spectrum, there's a great jazz scene. And Donald Byrd, jazz player, he studied under my dad. So I grew up – he played my father's funeral, actually, which is pretty deep going back to that time. You know, stuff like Rock Creek Park, which is a classic funk track.
Yeah.
Remixing says, look, we're going to say history is there. It's already there. But let's switch it around because we need to update it. And nothing stays the same. You know, history itself is always changing because it's about perspective. And I think we're going to be looking at the 90s and the 2000s is when people realized that culture became digital. And that's where I like to call it coded culture and coded culture. And Saul Williams has a track about that. But at the end of the day, right now, as we move further into a digital media economy and a digital media landscape, African-American culture, you know, global culture, you name it, white, black, Asian, Latino, the tools now are digital. And I think people are going to be needing to create a new kind of literacy. And that's what my music is about.
How do you see that, Paul, from your work? The other Paul Rucker.
Yeah. No, I love the way you start out with this day in history because, you know, everything old is new again. You talk about the James Byrd.
Right.
This is modern day lynching that happened in late 90s, 98. And at that same time, Matthew Shepard was killed. I mean, that spurred the whole hate riot. But I think it's important. This place is so rich in history. And like Paul just mentioned, things are really different now. I mean, things are accessible. Everything's so digital now. But we can still make the same mistakes in a new form if we don't really learn about the history that we've had in the past.
And to me, that was part of what I was thinking about looking at these things, which is the heart of Remix to me. And I must say, preparing for this program sent me off in a different direction because I've been thinking a lot about where the 21st century is going as a kind of redefining humanity, mixing culture, mixing ideas, mixing all kinds of things that are happening, ideologies, economy, whatever it is. And so I was thinking about the work you were doing, Paul Miller, just in terms of the whole philosophy of Remix. And it really is – this is a powerful notion for us to wrestle with in terms of where we're going,
mm-hmm.
you know?
And don't forget the film I'm presenting, How to Make Money Selling Drugs. Well, it's a film that's really intriguing that was commissioned through Tribeca Film Festival. And it's an eerie film because it's a shockingly candid exploration of the failed war on drugs, which, of course, is usually the director is Matthew Cook, C-O-O-K-E, not C-O-K-E, Cook or Coke, depending on your the Coke brothers, for example, is spelled K-O-C-H, you know. Mm. So I always chuckle about the way the war on drugs was usually a war on people of color and rural and poverty and so on. Then you have shows glorifying it, you know, like, for example, Breaking Bad or The Wire,
right?
Where people can just kind of watch other people being destroyed, you know, but on the comfort from their living room, you know. So as an African-American artist, it's just kind of surreal because right now the prison industrial complex has created such a powerful gravitational well in our culture. You know, it's profits for prison that makes everything, like, you know, just they just throw people in jail over nothing. I mean, it's incredible. But the system is so locked in place and it's so profitable that they're finding it difficult to try and figure out how to pull it apart. As a musician, now, I'm looking at that from a whole different angle. As a musician, as an artist, I'm always thinking that information is my palette. You know, I think that people should be able to have access to better information. And once they do, maybe they'll magically wake up in the morning. But then you realize, you know, Republicans and stuff, they're like, oh, there is no global warming. Meanwhile, we have crazy weather. So it's not really about facts. Sometimes you want to feel like it's about facts, but it's about the emotional logic. So music is a way that you can kind of hit people in a different direction and, like, kind of use that to guide the experience to say maybe another world's possible, you know? That's just me as an artist, but,
yeah.
You know.
Similar?
Yeah, I think as an artist we try to make the unseen seen or at least a little more palatable and to understand. It's like a lot of my work, like, deals with the prison system. And like what Paul just mentioned, I mean, we have 2.3 million people in prison. One in every 99 people in the U.S. is in prison. And prison labor.
That's a stunning number.
That's the most in the world.
Yeah, most in the world.
Yeah.
And, but you have companies like that use prison labor, like Microsoft, Boeing, Victoria's Secret, Skyco, AT&T. A lot of call centers are in prison right now. And
that's something people do not know what you just said.
Yeah.
That's a fact that is kind of hidden beneath the bushes.
Yeah, and one of the biggest.
So 1-800-PRISON?
1-800-PRISON, you know?
Right.
Three strikes, you're hired, you know?
Right, three strikes, you're hired. Well, yeah, I mean, this is very cynical times, and it's an eerie moment because you have to imagine that most people assume that the idea of the correctional facility is something that people are being put into as a reform, or but it's actually very specific to economics. Now, again, I'm going to hit this from an art angle, and this is Paul Miller here, and the other gentleman is Paul Rucker. You'll hear our voices interchange, but there's some information. He's based on data visualization. Mine is looking at data as a kind of sampling palette. Like, I'll take old records and flip them around, but I also do my visual art. And going to Antarctica, for example, recently I did a book called The Book of Ice, which is available for free online. If you go to djspooky.com. I'm very interested in free culture instead of this, like, you know, locking things down. And Antarctica is the only place on Earth with no government. So I went there as a way of showing, like, kind of what would happen if an artist has all of these structures pulled away and you're left with just creativity. So some of the music I made there, we're going to be having as installations here at MICA. And the film tonight, the war, you know, it's all about the war on drugs. And it's a very candid assessment of, they ask, you know, functional drug dealers what their kind of whole idea of their creative response to this crazy situation. That it doesn't mean they're heroes, doesn't mean that they're Robin Hood here. It means that they are not, you know, Monsanto or the Koch brothers or whatever.
Right.
You know.
But I mean, what you're describing, I only saw the trailer, but it looked really intense and interesting.
It's smart, yeah.
Yeah, I really want to see it. And it is like that. I mean, the film is saying that. I mean, that you have Koch brothers and others who come from a certain place, so their natural path would be to go where they are in terms of industry. They go to other places, but it's a natural path. It's a natural path if you've got nothing,
mm-hmm.
and an entrepreneurial have a way of making some money, that there it is. I can pick it up. I can feed my family, lose my job. Well, I can always go sell some reefer to make ends meet.
Yeah, no, that's, people, you know, people life. Try mm-hmm. to just, you know, grind and get through life. I mean, and don't forget the way the economy is changing. More and more people are going to be you know, kind of put in a downward economic cycle. So, you know, there's a tremendous amount of pressure to try and figure out alternate ways to make finances meet. Now, that doesn't mean I endorse selling drugs. And right. I'm against, personally, you know, I'm sipping here on some green tea. But, you know, people have to figure out a new economy. And I personally think that we need to understand legalization doesn't mean endorsement. It means people mm-hmm. need to be responsible and right. be given tools to understand what's going on.
Let me go to the phones here, and we're going to go to break here. We're going to be going out with Of Water and Ice, which is one of the songs on the new piece of work you've done on this, which I think is incredible. I have a question about that when we come back from break. 410, we are here with Mike Scott. Mike, you're on the air.
Hey, you know, the only guys harder to catch up with than you, Mark, is these guys. I've been looking forward to this conversation. So Paul, you and I have been trying to catch up, but I'm going to come to your film tonight so we can finally have that chat. I wanted to ask these brothers, though, about, you know, they mentioned voice a lot, and, you know, for our work at Equity Matters is around data and really power. But I like them as artists because artists have intellectual property, right? To really talk about the issue of power, voice, and co-option. And you mentioned, you know, go-go and sort of the whole gentrification and how culture and art is very much co-opted and can rob folks that are most affected of their voice. And so I just would like those guys to riff off of that. I look forward to hearing more about the other Paul, the music Paul. There's a Thinks is coming through on Saturday, so hopefully he'll do a jam session there. But
okay.
I'll hear you guys riff.
Okay. Mark, so I'll riff on that for a second. I mean, I'm here with Micah because I'm curating a film series that's looking at alternate perspectives in digital culture. So we have everything from a film called Slam with Saul Williams that I produced the soundtrack to a film called Downloaded that was about the rise of Napster, which to me was what you call disruptive innovation. You know, when you take something and just flip it. To answer your question head on direct, you know, intellectual property to me is about piracy. And I think it's a different, there's a very famous quote from Proudhon where it says, all property is theft. Now, I'm not a property rights anarchist or intellectual property anarchist. I am someone who thinks that we have rules and laws that are written for a different era. And that era was when there was physical objects. But now everything's digital and it's about infinite copies. And you have to think about reforming the laws to kind of fit our current era where anyone should be able to rip, mix, and burn and remix and sample and splice and dice because it's about an attention economy, building a relationship to how many people are checking out your streams, your downloads, you name it. But the laws were written for physical objects, and that's very difficult to enforce once it's all digital.
So we're going to take a brief break here. We're going to go out right now a little bit of Water and Ice. Check your math.
Here with DJ Spooky.
I was going to say DJ Spooky, a.k.a. Paul Miller. It can go either way, I guess. And Paul Rucker, both here as artists in residence at MICA. 410-319-8888 is the number here. I want to kind of pick up on what you were talking about, Paul, when Michael Scott called in. And I was thinking about this whole notion of idea of co-opting. And people talk a lot about co-opting black culture and what and how it's been in music and art and other places have been co-opted in literature. And a lot of that has taken place in levels in New York and L.A. and D.C. where the power of money is they can co-opt and change things. But to me, there's a dialectic in process here, and maybe you don't agree, I just want to throw this out here, that there's also the remixing of our culture. And I had on my program last week Erica Blount, Danois, who wrote this book about the TV shows in the early 70s and how music was brought to the, America in ways it didn't have before. And I started thinking about the revolution that took place in the early 70s and while co-optation is a piece of it, there is a subversive remix that's the other part of that where American culture is being redefined and defined again by its blackness, by its Indianness, by other parts that never had a chance to define it because it was controlled somewhere else. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
No, I hear you. I mean, the eerie thing right now is anything goes as long as it works. If it doesn't work, then it doesn't work. You know. So the funny part about when you think about the 20th century versus 21st, I like to think of it as like the 20th century is defined by Henry Ford and this idea of mass production, right? You can have any car you want as long as it's black. That's what he used to say. And the funny thing is like everything is tied to economics. There's no question. That's why I was happy to hear you use the term dialectics. But at the same time, it's about cultural capital, you know, when people build new forms of creative processes that reflect new times. You know? So when we walked into your radio station, I heard you guys were playing Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman's show on The Spies of Mississippi, which is an incredible film.
Documentary.
And in a way, you know, the civil rights movement. My dad was a dean of Howard University's law school around that time, and one of his main cases was Angela Davis. And I bumped into Angela a little while ago, and we were just talking about how she was lecturing on the prison industrial system and so on. It's the anniversary of the Civil War as well this year, the sesquicentennial.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that it's incredible to wake up and realize how different it is, which is on one hand such a beautiful thing, but it also shows let's push further and harder, you know. I like the fact that I woke up this weekend and the people of Ukraine had made a decision that a terrible president needed to be, you know, driven from power. There's been more revolutions in the last couple of years than, you know, it's incredible. And I think if you think about what is a revolution, it's when people wake up and they say, I can't take this anymore. You know, it's just like, it's too much.
The movie Network.
Yeah. And, you know, in 1989, when I was a kid, I woke up and the Soviet Union was gone. And that had defined my childhood because the whole Cold War situation.
Right.
Was what America used to say, look, hold your demands for civil rights because we have this little Cold War going on. Just, like, give us a second. We're dealing with this Russian stuff. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you can never wait. Power concedes nothing without demand, as Frederick Douglass liked to say. But our demands now are usually been so guided by hyper-consumerism and stuff like that that, you know, people just want to wake up and pay for their credit card bill, get a new cell phone, new TV, whatever, you know. It's eerie to see how numb everybody is. And we've had the longest war in American history, and nobody really can remember why. You know, Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11, but, you know, et cetera,
right.
Et cetera.
I mean, Paul, let's jump in with your thoughts on this, too, before we...
I think Paul just hit it. I mean,
the
numbness factor that this here... As far as I mean, it's like the bread and circus thing, and we're very comfortable here. You know, I don't see a real revolution happening here because you know because I guess if you look at the 20% of the poorest people in the U.S., they're still better off than 50% of the world's population as far as access to things. I mean, and if you see what's happened in Egypt, if you see what's happening in Syria, I mean, these are, you know, more dire situations as far as access to food, you know, when they had hyperinflation. But back to the cultural appropriation of things, I mean, it's not old fact that, you know, black artists a long time ago would make music and then it wouldn't be a big hit, but then you have a white artist that would remake the same tune, it would be a much bigger hit. And that had more to do with economics than it had to do with race. If you look at it in a bigger picture, it's about money. It's about not about black and white. It's really about green. But now you have Farrell and you have Marvin Gaye. You know, you can hear, you can put those tunes together. You know, so it can cross not just color boundaries. It's more about the green factor. But that's another longer conversation that we could probably have a whole show about.
We need to do this. I'm going to invite you both back.
Okay.
I would love to have you both back so we can really get into this for a longer conversation. You mentioned Ukraine, and that's where we're going now, to the Ukraine.
It's pretty deep, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have to admit, I was really happy to see a peaceful revolution and a situation. Again, though, a lot of the old faces of the old regime are already back, you know, people. So it's kind of an eerie thing because you assume people really want sovereignty, and this is a time where you can say you have agency. If you don't like it, try and change it.
And what we're going to hear
in this peaceful
in this next segment is that some of the folks in power moving in are not so friendly.
Yeah, definitely not.
And we're going to talk about who they are. Right.
And thanks for having us, man.
It's good to have you here. Real pleasure. Paul Miller, Paul Rucker, great to have you both in the studio.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. This is Mark Steiner, and you're listening to an archived edition of The Mark Steiner Show here on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We'll return to this archived edition of The Mark Steiner Show after this very short break. On the way to break, we're hearing Dream, A Little Dream of Me by the Mamas and Papas. Cass Elliott of the Mamas and Papas was born in this day in 1941, a Baltimore girl, born here, raised here, went to Forest Park High School.
Say kiss me, just hold me tight and tell me you'll miss me. Why?